Also remember the lads to leaders, leaderettes, their families that will be traveling, Lord willing, in the next few days for the convention in Orlando, April the 2nd through the 4th. For those of you not familiar, you visitors with us or others that may know that we have this program at Creekwood but may not know much about it, I want to give you a few things about it and, in fact, allow this to be the springboard for the lesson this morning. It is a tool that to help develop young children all the way through adults into effective leaders for God and for the church. Jack Zorn began this work, I believe, in Warner Robins, Georgia, as he was preaching there and took some of the young men and began to teach them about public speaking and other things, and that has grown into this program, which many churches of Christ use in their program of work. He has written 10 leader pledges. And this kind of gives us an idea as to things that are emphasized in this program. And I want to share those 10 leader pledges with you this morning. Number one is, I am answerable to God and to society. Matthew 22, verse 21 is listed. Render therefore unto Caesar the things that belong to Caesar. Render unto God the things that belong to God. We're answerable to God and society. Number two, I will overcome pessimism and live a life of faith in God. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Philippians 4:13. Number three, I'm fully responsible for my behavior. And I think that's a need in our society today for us to accept responsibility and teach our children to do the same. Number four, I'm responsible for my agreements and obligations. Matthew 7:12 is listed as the golden rule. But this is a principle found throughout Scripture that we need to let our yes be yes, our no be no, be true to our word. Number five, I pursue honest work to meet my responsibilities. We need to have and teach our children to have a strong work ethic, to provide for their families, to be productive in society. Number six, I honor and obey my parents and respect persons in authority. Number seven, I respect my body as the creation of God and use it for His glory. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 20, which says, you've been bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God with your body, which belongs to God. Number eight is so important. I choose for my friends those who enjoy doing good. We know that our friends, no matter what age we are, impact our behavior, impact our thought processes. And particularly when we're young, we need to guard whom we select as friends. Number nine, I lead in building character and in demonstrating integrity. Integrity is probably one of my favorite words. The idea of being true to your word, of keeping your commitments, and how this needs to be emphasized in society today. And number 10, I lead in second mile service to others. If anyone bids you go 1 mile, go with him too. Going the second mile, a great, great principle for life. I want to zoom in on number 9. I lead in building character and in demonstrating integrity. I want to tell you about four different people who are examples of people of character and integrity. The first one is Ruben Gonzalez. Ruben Gonzalez was a professional racquetball player. And he found that he was in the championship and the competition was fierce. But he made a killer shot into the front wall to what the ones watching, officiating, said was the winning shot. However, he knew differently. And he went over to his opponent and shook hands with him and congratulated him for winning the match. And he walked off the court to the surprise of all who were watching this professional racquetball tournament. Everyone couldn't believe that even though he had been pronounced the winner of that tournament, that he surrendered that title because he knew that the other man had really won the game. When asked why, he gave this response: "It was the only thing I could do to maintain my integrity. There will always be another match to win, but I could never regain my lost integrity." Then there's Coach Cleveland Stroud. He coached the blue-collar Bulldogs of Rockdale High School in Georgia for 18 years. In one particular year, his team was 21-5 and headed for the state basketball championship. And it was a close game. They came back from behind and they won the championship, state championship. He says it was the perfect night, a night that you would dream of. And his players carried him off the court when they won the game. 2 months later, he was going through some records, in fact, the grades of his basketball players, when he discovered that one of his players had been academically ineligible. He had only played 45 seconds during the first of 5 postseason games, had made no significant impact on the outcome of the game. What was he to do? That player was not eligible to play. He did what he thought was the only thing to do. He made the error known and forfeited the state championship. His statement to his team was this: "Winning is the most important goal to any coach, but your principles have to be higher than your goals. You've got to do what is honest and right and what the rules say. People will forget the scores of basketball games, but they don't ever forget what you're made of." That's character. That's integrity. Then there was a young girl a few years ago who, before a national audience, misspelled a word at a national spelling competition. The judges misheard her and gave her credit for spelling the word correctly. She turned to take her seat, but then she turned back around and let it be known that she had misspelled the word. That's character. Then there's the surgical technician responsible for the sponges that were used during an operation and would not allow the patient to be closed up until all the sponges had been accounted for. In one such surgery, she counted 11 sponges, but she knew that 12 had been used in the surgery. The surgeon said, "Close up the cavity." She says, "No, I cannot. There are only 11 sponges that I have accounted for. There's one more." The doctor looked at her and asked if she was questioning his authority. Her response was, "No, sir, I'm just doing my job. And I'm certain that 12 sponges went in, and I only have 11 on my tray." He looked at her and asked, "First day, right? Close the cavity." She refused to do so. There were 12 sponges went in. Only 11 came out. The doctor glared at her, but then he smiled and winked and lifted up his foot, under which was the 12th sponge. He said, "Hun, I think you'll do. Close the cavity." That's character. People who will not slout. People who will hold to high standards when it comes to morals and ethics, when it comes to being fair and honest, when it comes to being trustworthy and faithful. I'm afraid in our society, we value ability, personality, position to the exclusion of character. But what matters most in God's eyes and what should matter most in our eyes, not only in the people that we see, but in our own lives, we should appreciate and affirm character. In the passage that Brother Ken read for us, I want to read with you again from Ezekiel. Ezekiel chapter 8. And the prophet is given a glimpse into the lives of the religious leaders of his day. And what God is showing him is that, you know, you may see one thing, but what's going on behind closed doors is something far different. And notice the revelation that he had here. Ezekiel 8 verse 7. "So he brought me to the door of the court, and when I looked, there was a hole in the wall. And he said to me, 'Son of man, dig into the wall.' And when I dug into the wall, there was a door. And he said to me, 'Go in and see the wicked abominations which they are doing there.'" What were they doing? I went in and saw, and there every sort of creeping thing, abominable beasts, and all the idols of the house of Israel portrayed all around on the walls. So rooms full of idolatry. And there stood before them 70 men of the elders of the house of Israel, the leaders of Israel. And in their midst stood Jaazaniah, the son of Shaphan. Each man had a censer in his hand, and a thick cloud of incense went up. What are they doing but worshiping these idols, these false gods? And notice what God says to Ezekiel. And he said to me, "Son of man, have you seen what the elders of the house of Israel do in the dark? Every man in the room of his idols. For they say, 'The Lord does not see us. The Lord has forsaken the land.'" Do you see what they're doing in the dark? Do you see what they're doing behind closed doors? And what he's showing them is, this is the real character of the leaders of Israel. They say God has forsaken us, and so they've turned to idolatry, which was the very reason that God had caused punishment to come upon his people. But from this text, I'm reminded of a statement of character, that character is who you are when no one is looking. When Ezekiel the prophet was given a glimpse into what was going on in the lives of the leaders of Israel behind closed doors, he was enabled to see their real character. Their real character was one that was not faithfulness to God, but had gone into idolatry. Folks, character is who we are when no one is looking. I want to make 5 observations about character this morning. Number one, character is what you are, not what you appear to be. It's what you are, not what you appear to be. Because appearances can be so deceiving. I read about a guy who was traveling out west, and unavoidably he hit a moose deer. But he kept on going, saw this moose deer in his rearview mirror. And the more that he thought about it, the more he thought, "I cannot leave that deer lying there. That's a traffic hazard. I've got to do something. Besides, that was a lot of meat." And so he went back around and painfully got that moose deer in the back of his SUV and then started down the road. When all of a sudden there was a clamor in the rear of his vehicle, that moose deer that he thought was dead had only been stunned and came back to life and wreaked havoc in his vehicle. Folks, appearances can be deceiving. There's also the record that I read about a lady who was shopping in a local supermarket, appeared to be in the 8th or 9th month of pregnancy, just really having a miserable time being mobile. When she left the store and went to her car, she proceeded to give birth to a pound of butter, a chuck roast, pancake syrup, 2 tubes of toothpaste, and 4 candy bars. Folks, appearances can be deceiving. But character is not what you appear to be. It's what you are. Joe Kennedy, so I've read, told his boys, Jack, John, Robert, and Ted, "What counts is not what you are, but what you appear to be." And based upon statements like that, the industry of image making is born. You put forward your best face. You perfect your public image. You play the game, whatever the price. Just appear to be all that people want you to be. But at the root of that is deception. Stephen Covey calls it the personality ethic. It has pervaded our culture over the last few years. And it's so different from what the Bible teaches. When Samuel was commissioned by God to anoint the next king of Israel, he knew that one of the sons of Jesse would be the next king. He saw Eliab and thought, "There's the one." But you remember what God said to him, 1 Samuel 16, verse 7. "Do not look at his appearance or at the height of his stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord does not see as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." At the heart, the seed of character, which goes beneath appearances, to the reality of a person's being. Jesus says, do not judge according to appearance, but judge with righteous judgment. Character is a Joseph who is sold into slavery because of jealousy of his brothers, who is put into prison for something that he did not do, who is forgotten when one had the opportunity to put in a good word for him, but yet who throughout his life remained faithful to God. Character is Daniel, who would not do what the king demanded because it was not according to his command by God. Character is not what you appear to be. It is what you are. Character number two is about who you are at the core. And again, it goes beneath our appearances to our very hearts. That's why we read in Proverbs 4:23, keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life. And notice Proverbs 27, verse 19. I love this passage. As water reflects a face, so a man's heart reflects the man. Jesus says, a good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things. And an evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things. Our thoughts or our words, our actions proceed from our hearts. Good things come out of good hearts. Evil things come out of evil hearts. Character has to do with what goes on deep down in that place that the Bible calls the heart, where our intentions are made, where the desires and the motives and the habits of our hearts dwell. One has said, you're not what you think. You're not what you think you are, but what you think is what you are. As a man thinks in his heart, so is he. What are our thoughts? What do our hearts reveal about us? It's really our hearts that determine character. Thirdly, character is, however, about what you do. It does have everything to do with what you do. Because character implies a consistency in what I am and what I do. And what is in my heart and how I live my life daily. Those all have to do with character. As the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also. You see, character is a matter of what we say and what we do being consistent, matching, practicing what we preach, walking that matches our talking. In 2002, some of you may remember this, Winona Ryder was videotaped stealing merchandise from an exclusive department store in Los Angeles. She was arrested, tried, and given probation and community service. After trial, the prosecutor had the following comment before TV cameras. The case was never about personal character, but about personal conduct. Folks, you can't separate the two. What we do is a reflection of who we are. Our actions proceed from our hearts. Character goes down deep. It's about our hearts, what we think, but it also has to do with what we do. It isn't what we do once in a while. It's not what we do when we feel like it or when it's to our advantage. In fact, character is day in and day out consistency. It is daily walking your talk. Fourthly, character is about the tension between our wants and our wills. Paul Faulkner wrote about our wanter and our willer. And there's a tension between the two. We tend to be selfish creatures. And that gets us into trouble. Selfishness leads to sin. We tend to be selfish creatures. But then God calls us out of self-centeredness into following him. Jesus said to his disciples, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. You see, what it boils down to Is our willingness changing, overcoming our wants to our wills, and willing and wanting to do what Jesus prayed? Father, if you are willing, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. There's the tension. My will or his will? And that describes the struggle between what we want to do with our selfishness and what we will do, what we will to do. And our will must take priority over our wants. We must surrender our wills to the will of God if we would be people of character. You see, character is doing what is right even when you want to do wrong. It's doing good when there's nothing tangible to gain. It's loving others, though it results in personal loss. It's hanging in there, even when it hurts. It's faithfulness in the face of frustration. And finally, character is about what you are becoming. Not only what you are from the inside out, but what you are becoming. Where we're headed with our lives tells us a lot about our character. One writer put it this way: character implies that our choices are not nearly as interesting as the person that is being produced by those choices. And that teaches us that we must have in mind the type of people we want to be and then make choices accordingly. And all of us, I'm sure, want to be like Christ. And then the choices that we have each and every day must be consistent with that. We must make those choices that'll help us become more like who we want to be, more like Jesus. We are who and what we are because of the choices that we've made in our lives up to this point. And who and what we will become will be the result of the choices that we make from this day forward. Joe Frazier, many of you remember him as a boxer. He made this statement. It pertains to boxing, but it's also a great principle for life. If you fail to do your road work in the wee hours of the morning, you'll be found out under the bright lights of the ring. And it goes back to the choices that we make. Those character-based choices that we make every day will be exposed in the tomorrows of our lives. There's no way around it. The Bible says, be not deceived. God is not mocked. Whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. Character is about what we're becoming. And again, our emphasis should be, we want to be like Jesus. And that impacts the choices that you and I make even today. There was a piece printed in the Chicago Times several years ago. It goes like this. When Johnny was 6 years old, he was with his father when they were stopped for speeding. His father handed the officer a $20 bill along with his driver's license, and he turned to his son and said, "It's okay, son. Everybody does it." When Johnny was 8 years old, he was present at a family gathering led by his Uncle George, where they discussed the cleverest means to shave money off of their income tax returns. He was told on that occasion, "Johnny, everybody does this." When he was 9 years old, his mother took him to his first theater production. The box office attendant could not find any extra seats until his mother found an extra $10 bill in her purse. She told him, "That's the way everybody does it." When he was 12 years old, he broke his glasses on the way to school. His Aunt Francine turned them into the insurance company as being lost and was reimbursed. She said, "It's okay. Everybody does it." When he was 15, he made right guard on the football team. His coach showed him how to block and at the same time grab the jersey of the opponent in a way that the referee could not see it. The coach said, "It's okay. Everybody does it." When he was 16, he took his first summer job at the supermarket. His assignment was to put the overripe strawberries on the bottom and the good ones on the top. He was told, "It's all right, kid. Everybody does it." He was 19 years old and in college. He was approached by an upperclassman who offered him the test answers for $50. It's okay. We all do it. Johnny did it. He was caught and sent home in disgrace. How could you do this to your mother and me? His father demanded. You never did anything like this at home. His aunts and uncles were also shocked and told him that if there was one thing that the adult world could not stand, it was a kid who cheats. Where did he learn it? A preacher wrote, "How important is character to me personally?" And he gave this anecdote from his own life. Soon after moving to Pulaski, Tennessee, my children, Josh and Brittany, ages 8 and 6, walked out of Bilo one day when I put a quarter into a Coke machine, must have been several years ago, and out came not one but two Cokes. I told Josh and Brittany to go on to the car where their mom was waiting, and I took the extra Coke back into the store. When I came back out to the car, the first thing I heard as I opened the door was Brittany telling Josh, "I told you he would take it back." He says, "I've thought about that comment many times since." He said, "For 25 cents, I could have lost credibility with the two people with whom I need it the most." Character is precious. It's critical. It's crucial if we would have an influence, the right kind of influence, on those in our lives. It's crucial to living the Christian life. So I want us to consider leader pledge number 9. I lead in building character and in demonstrating integrity. May that be the pledge of all our hearts, no matter what age we may be. Because as a person of character, no, he or she will not be perfect. But when confronted with sin in our lives, people of character will admit it, will seek forgiveness, and strive not to repeat those same mistakes. A person of character will seek to live for Christ, not perfectly, but intentionally. What is our character? Who are we in the dark, behind closed doors, when no one is looking? Yes, we're imperfect. We make mistakes. And thank God that He loved us so much that He gave us Jesus to go to the cross where we could be forgiven of those sins when we surrender our lives to Him. And thanks be to God that He gave us the example of Jesus, our ultimate model for which we should strive, because when we're striving to follow Christ, we're striving to live lives of character. If you need to respond to the invitation of Christ this morning, whether to become a child of God or to repent and ask prayers for our sins as we strive to follow in the steps of Jesus, won't you let that be known as together we stand and sing.